It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The most expensive judicial race in U.S. history, a bipartisan state budget bill, and Governor Tony Evers deciding not to seek re-election.
Those are just a few of the stories that topped the headlines in Wisconsin politics over the last year. And elections in 2026 will determine control of the governor's office and could potentially lead to a shakeup of power in the state legislature.
To look back on last year's top political news and preview what's ahead in this new year, we're joined by Sean Johnson, WPR's Capital Bureau Chief. Sean, thanks for being with us.
Hey, Kate, thanks for having me.
Let's start back in the spring of 2025, state Supreme Court election that saw then Dane County Judge Susan Crawford defeating then Waukesha County Judge Brad Schimmel, and liberals cementing a 4-3 majority on the high court. There was a huge amount of national attention on this election. What stood out to you here in this election?
I think this election was kind of the perfect storm of what state Supreme Court races have become, in Wisconsin anyway, where we've gotten used to these things being these huge dollar, very political springtime affairs. What happened here was you had a few big factors at play. One, the ideological balance of the state Supreme Court was up in the air. And so whichever side won would be able to claim that. You had the first big election, or really the first election in Wisconsin, a swing state after the 2024 presidential election. And so both parties are always looking for signs in those and also looking to kind of stake out momentum that they can claim in future elections. So that kind of nationalized Wisconsin's race. And then you had billionaire Elon Musk, who was then the most prominent figure in the Trump administration, spending millions of dollars here that kind of turned up the pressure. So not only was there more money in the race, he's such an attention getting figure that the Wisconsin Supreme Court race was the number one political story in the country there for a little while.
Tens of millions of dollars spent on this race. Why was Wisconsin's Supreme Court seen as so crucial to national parties?
I think that, like, early on, these parties are just looking for any way to kind of carve out a way to say, look, the momentum's with us. And for Democrats this time, it was especially important because 2024 was just so disastrous for Democrats. And the party spirits were, you know, frankly, so low that this race was a chance for them to build on something. And it's not the same as a November election. Turnout in Wisconsin spring elections is very different than in November, but it does give them kind of a chance to say, like, look, this is what happens when we put our minds to it in swing state Wisconsin. And then just, you know, on a practical level, this ends up being very big for liberals on the court.
It was also a budget year. The two-year state budget was passed largely with Republican support in an unprecedented single day on July 2nd, signed by Democratic Governor Evers hours later on July 3rd. Remind us, what was the urgency by lawmakers on both sides of the aisle?
There was something going on at the federal level that got their attention, basically. And that is that, there was this chance for Wisconsin Hospital specifically to take part in something called the hospital assessment. Basically, they agree to get themselves taxed in exchange for generating more federal Medicaid revenue. So something a lot of other states had done, Wisconsin had not done. And so this was going to be the last chance for them to do it before that practice was basically shut down by a bill that they were debating, in Congress that President Trump was about to sign. So that gave some urgency to this budget deal. And because it was a bipartisan budget, which was bipartisan in a way we haven't seen before, where Democrats and Republicans actually negotiated and had some real give and take.
Can you go into that give and take? Like, what were some of the biggest items and changes in this budget that now runs through mid-2027?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you just looked at what they agreed to, for Democrats, you had a boost of more than $500 million to special education, which is something that Tony Evers had really prioritized. It's not everything he wanted in terms of special education funding, but that has been one of his big priorities. more than $300 million for childcare, more money, a big substantial increase for the University of Wisconsin. Those were all Evers priorities or Democratic priorities. And then for Republicans, they got a tax cut that was along the lines of something that, you know, Evers had been opposed to in the past, which it basically expands the amount of income covered by the state's second lowest tax bracket. So that was a big one for Republicans. And you had a mix of Republicans and Democrats for and against this thing, too, which is really rare when it comes to these budgets. It's usually just Republicans send the governor something, let him work it out with his vetoes. Not this time. They cut a deal.
Maybe the biggest single headline and a surprise to some was Tony Evers announcing he will not seek re-election for governor. Here he is in late July releasing that 2-minute video on social media announcing his plans for the 2026 elections.
It's why Wisconsin, I'm announcing that I will not be running for a third term. I'm so humbled to be your governor. This is the best job I ever had.
Sean, what stuck out to you about his decision and the political context around it?
I think what stands out now, you know, just looking back, is maybe it made sense. You know, I think it's always shocking the moment when a governor, especially a popular governor, which he is by Wisconsin standards, according to, you know, the statewide polling that we've had, it's shocking when a governor decides, I am not going to do this anymore. I am relinquishing this power. And especially in the case of Tony Evers, given this election cycle, which is expected to favor Democrats, he would have been the favorite next year, I think. It's fair to assume. That's always a little bit jaw-dropping when you're watching it in the moment. In hindsight, we don't have a lot of three-term governors here in Wisconsin. And Tony Evers is of an age where he could retire from this stuff if he wanted to and go enjoy his family, which is what he says he's going to do. So, you know, by that measure, not shocking, but certainly a seismic event in Wisconsin politics.
We're talking with WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson, taking a look back at the top political news of the last year. And now, Sean, let's turn to the big stories we're following in 2026. Along the thread line of the governor's office and with Governor Evers not seeking re-election, that's opened up the primary race for governor for both parties, and there's activity there. You know, candidates are already stacking up. What are we seeing here?
I'm just going to rip through the Democratic candidates here real quick to give you a sense of how many there are. Real fast. Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez, Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley, Madison State Senator Kel DeRoys, Madison State Representative Francesca Hong, former Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation CEO Missy Hughes, former Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, former Evers Cabinet official Joel Brennan on the Democratic side. So this is what happens when it's presumed to be a Democratic year and there's no incumbent. You're seeing a big primary there. On the Republican side, there's just a couple right now. Tom Tiffany, the congressman from northern Wisconsin, and Washington County Executive Josh Shoman. Maybe Republican Tim Michaels, who ran for governor in 2022. That's a big wild card there. So what you're seeing right now is a lot of candidates, especially on the Democratic side.
So timeline then for this race to shake out, when will this race firm up?
At some point, I think in the summer, you're going to see probably some of those names decide they're doing something else. You know, you go to circulate petitions, you kind of see where you're at realistically with fundraising, and some of them may decide, look, I don't have a realistic path. But you can imagine, you know, just looking at it right now, you can imagine all of them sitting in. So I'm not going to sit here and tell you who it's going to be. I just know that like by summer, it'll shake out a bit. And then you're going to have a multi-candidate primary almost assuredly, though, right now.
And another state Supreme Court election in April. That's something we can get used to here for a number of years to come. What's at stake in this next Supreme Court election?
So the stakes are not quite as high as they've been because, you know, for once, we don't have the future of the court just kind of hanging in the balance this year. So unlike the last couple elections, that's not happening. You have two candidates, a conservative, Maria Lazar, and a liberal, Chris Taylor, both judges. If Lazar or another conservative were to win next year, it would keep liberals from expanding their 4-3 majority. But liberals would probably still hold the court until 2028 at the, you know, at the latest. If liberals win next year, that is, if Chris Taylor is the candidate, they'd grow their majority to 5-2 and likely hold the court until at least 2030. So it's big from that perspective. Like, you could be looking at kind of a generational hold of the court here, potentially, depending on how it plays out.
On the ballot, control of the state legislature will be at stake. Republicans have controlled both chambers for more than a decade now. Why are we talking about this election as a potential tipping point?
I think ever since, or I guess from the point when they redrew the maps, ahead of the last election, we're going to be talking about every election as could go either way potentially, because these are competitive maps that we have now in Wisconsin. In the state assembly, Democrats were able to flip, I believe, 10 seats last time. So really cut into Republicans' majority. But, you know, it's still a Republican year. And so Republicans have majorities in both chambers of the legislature. But this is potentially a Democratic year, and you have a competitive map. And so there's going to be a battle for control of that chamber. And in the Senate, this is the first time, really, when Democrats have had a shot at flipping that chamber, because not all senators are on the ballot every couple of years. And so margins are slim there. You can definitely see a path where it could happen, depending on how many seats both sides win. Democrats have to flip a net 2 seats. So this is really an election potentially about whether one party controls all of state government. And, you know, we've seen when that happens, they can do big things.
All right, so lots to come for a politics team. Sean, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Kate.
That is Sean Johnson, WPR's Capital Bureau Chief. He was with us to round up the top political stories of last year and look ahead to what's likely to make headlines in 2026. You can follow all the reporting from the WPR news team at WPR.org.